You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on in to the Locked On Syracuse podcast. Tyler Rocky and Tim Leonard. We got all things Alan Griffin on today's show. We'll get into that in just a second. But first, be sure to check us out on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. And if you're new to the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button. We are the best place, the only place to get daily Syracuse podcasts. So be sure to come along for the ride. We've got a lot of fun stuff lined up for everyone over the course of these next couple of weeks as we inch closer and closer to the start of football season. Before you know it, we are going to be right around the corner. NFL draft coming up as well. So we're hoping to talk to some of the Syracuse prospects that are looking to take that NFL leap this season. But first, we start with a mini funeral here, Tim. It is the rest in peace to the Alan Griffin versus Alan Griffin, the coach, confusion, which honestly, I don't think got pent up enough. I feel like that wasn't a big enough thing, or at least as big as I thought it was going to be. But of course, the news coming out yesterday that Alan Griffin, the player, is declaring for the NBA draft, a move that I think shocked quite a few folks. But at the same time, I think you and I have both kind of been steadfast that he has played for his last college and he was not going to transfer out. I didn't feel that way. He was either going to come back to Syracuse or weigh his pro options, and not only is he weighing his pro options, he's not just dipping a toe in, he's diving full on in, head first, into the pro pool because he's signing an agent. So this is it for Alan Griffin.
Yeah, you know, he never directly came out and said anything like, I really want to play in the NBA, but just kind of reading through the tea leaves, it always seemed like a big reason why he transferred out of Illinois, because let's face it, Illinois had a great team this past year, and he could have been a part, in theory, of a national championship contending team. But he transferred out, and he wanted to get the ball in his hands more. A lot of what he said about why he went to Syracuse was based on playing time, based on his development as a player. And I kind of always felt like he was strongly considering bolting for the NBA in the middle of the season. And maybe he just sort of had it in his mind that, okay, I'm going to do it in the middle of the season. And then he kind of lost some momentum once the tournament happened, which is weird because the entire Syracuse team picked up momentum. But now it always felt like he really had NBA aspirations. His dad, we know his history there and his connections maybe could give him some intel on where he stands. And I wish him all the best from here on out.
And also, I mean, you bring up his dad. I mean, he's just been around the pro game for so long. Obviously, you mentioned his dad, who is a coach with the Toronto Raptors, but he was training with Jimmy Butler, too. I mean, this guy has been through, he knows what it's like to be around the pro game. His brother's probably going to be a pro sooner rather than later. So it was one of those things where when you're around it so much, you kind of have that itch for it. You want to take that next step. And I will say this. Out of everyone on this team, even though he wasn't the best player on Syracuse this season, I don't think that's really up for debate. He was clearly not the best player, but I always felt like he was the best pro prospect. When you look at some of the unteachable stuff, his athleticism, his ability to create some space. Now, he needed to improve his jump shot after he did create some space, but he always, to me, struck me as the most pro-caliber player on this team. I think a lot of, back to the Malachi Richardson year, he wasn't the best player on that team. It was clearly Michael Benajay, and maybe you could have picked someone else to slot in at second too, but he was obviously the best pro prospect on that team. And even though his pro career didn't necessarily turn out the way it was supposed to after being a first-round pick, I still see Alan Griffin as probably the guy that if things go right for him in this pre-draft process, I don't think he's going to end up getting drafted, obviously, but I still find him to be the most intriguing pro prospect. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you might be right, because I'm not totally bullish on the idea of Quincy Guerrier being a pro prospect. Now, the only guy that's actually popping up on mock draft still is Buddy Boeheim, who we know is coming back. Exactly. Which is kind of fascinating. The two guys have left the team, and they're nowhere to be found on any mock drafts. Now, I think there's maybe a slim chance Quincy gets drafted. I would say pretty much no chance that
Needs Alan to Griffin. Do really well in these workouts.
Yeah, and, you know, you can do that, but Alan Griffin is coming. It's an uphill climb for him to make it to an NBA roster, given where he's at. Now, he's living out his dream. He's trying to chase it, and this is probably his best chance to chase it. And I will say a case for him is, what was the thing that held him back this year? It was learning the 2-3 zone. He was really, when you look at his stats, he was objectively very good across the board in a lot of statistical categories, and it's kind of a fascinating legacy that he leaves now, because when we look back at his resume and his stats about 15, 20 years from now, it's going to be like, one, we're always going to remember him as the other Alan Griffin, unfortunately for his sake, but it'll just be weird that he came for a year, and he made some big plays, and he has these great stats, but he wasn't a part of the NCAA tournament run necessarily. I mean, he was a part of the team, but he shot at 1-for-13 in the last four games of the season.
Yeah, it was a frustrating end, and I think that's unfortunately what's going to be freshest in the minds of Syracuse fans when they look back at his career. But in terms of the decision, I mean, I look at it as, listen, just because you're declaring for the NBA draft doesn't mean that, like, you think you're going to get drafted. I mean, obviously, he probably is going in with the mindset, and we've seen the tweet, bet on yourself and all that stuff, but it just means you're going pro. There's more leagues than just the NBA. There's more leagues than just the NBA that can give you a healthy, healthy paycheck out of school. I mean, this is the kid who is dropping out of engineering school early, and you know what? I'm going to throw my resume out to Google, all right? That's what he's doing here. I'm going to throw my resume out to Apple. I mean, I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to do that. There's still plenty of other places that you can go and get a job that are very high paying. And listen, I mean, some people are just tired of the college life. Some people are. And that may have been the case with Alan Griffin. And obviously his final year of college was not a traditional year of college, given everything that's going on with the pandemic. But maybe he just wanted to take that next step in his life, and that's something that he saw as the best opportunity for him to move forward, and maybe college wasn't a part of that.
And you're right, he does have NBA potential. I mean, you look at how many shots he blocked this past year. I was doing some research on KenPom before.
I mean, rebounding too. People love rebounding guards, and he can do that.
Yeah, he's a 6'5 guy that his weakness was 2-3 zone defense. So if he can clean that up, he's probably a better man-to-man defender, I would say, than he was in the 2-3 zone, because a lot of it was just the principles of it and the rotations that he struggled with. But on KenPom, in the last 10 seasons, there's only been 8 players that have been 6'5, 6 feet 5 inches tall, and been inside the top 100 on the KenPom block rate. And he's the only guy in the past 2 seasons inside the top 100 on KenPom's block rate. He was 82nd this year, and he's 6'5". The only guy that's 6'5 in the past 2 seasons. So he's got a lot of length, and when pro guys look at his stats, and that's the thing that I'm talking about, like, if you never got to watch Alan Griffin, maybe 15, 20 years from now, you're a young high school kid, you're looking back at Syracuse's tournament team from 2021, he led the team in blocks. He led the team in free throw shooting, 89%. He was second in three-point shooting, 36%. He had 8 20-plus point games. He was basically leading the team in scoring for a good chunk of the season. All his stats look great, so it's going to be a puzzling legacy that he kind of leaves.
It's certainly a perplexing one. Hey, quick break to tell you about the best place to go to keep your car moving on the road. It is rockauto.com. You know, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's almost impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why often endure pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? You don't know that sort of question. And wait while the counterman or woman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry. Why do that when you've got computers with access to rockauto.com at home and also in your pocket? Rockauto.com is a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now. So go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks and they'll have it delivered directly to your door. They've got a amazing selection and reliably low prices. So all you got to do now is go to rockauto.com and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure that when you do make that purchase on rockauto.com, write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Let's get into the legacy a little bit more here, because this is the fundamental question that I want to ask when it comes to boiling down what Alan Griffin's legacy was. So to you, the Syracuse fan, to you, Tim, did you have fun this season? Did you have fun watching the Syracuse team this season because of the postseason run?
Because of the postseason run is the big catch there. But yes, I would say there were times where they were not fun to watch, but overall, my lasting impression is that was a fun Syracuse team, because what ultimately matters is the tournament, and they did well in the tournament.
Well, to that, I would say you have Alan Griffin to thank.
Yeah.
Because without that block against Buffalo, without that big play against Buffalo, this team is not in the tournament. If that ends up being a loss, and you can say, oh, well, they could have won more games down the road. Well, they did win those games down the road, and their seeding would suggest that they were comfortably in the tournament. But think about the bid stealers that came in at the end. And then on top of that, think about where the motivation of this team may be at the end if they had that loss to Buffalo on their resume. Or what could have happened out of the COVID pause as well. Listen, we just lost to a mediocre-ish Buffalo team, and that, I mean, if you feel a dagger in your season in the non-con like that, who knows how this season spirals out of control. You probably don't have the same motivation you have at the end of the year where you're thinking every game you're playing for your tournament lives because you've got that looming Buffalo loss in the background right now. So what I would say is that if this team, if you as a fan had fun this season, you have Alan Griffin to thank for a lot of that, because he was so good in that Buffalo game that without him, this team probably is not in the tournament. And we don't see the rise of Buddy Boeheim. We don't see some of these other stars blossom. We don't see a rejuvenated Joe Girard. Without the Alan Griffin game against Buffalo, none of this probably happens. And this was one of the more fun runs to watch in the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, and also he had 22 points and 10 rebounds against Clemson at the end of the regular season. That big home win when they were outside of the bubble, a must-win game. It's not like he didn't bring it basically all season. It was just the last four games. Those last four games, he scores 8 combined points. He's 1-for-13 from the floor, and he averages 12 minutes per game. But we're talking about a guy who started 27 of 28 games. He played in every game this year. He was objectively very, very good. I mean, you look at his KenPom player comps, which is a cool thing that they do on KenPom. I'm seeing 2016 Josh Hart. That was the year that Villanova won it all. Josh Hart's an NBA player, a very good NBA player.
Very good
also
one. Yeah.
Kind of a good comp because he's a great rebounding guard as well. 2019 Devin Daniels from NC State. Don't know his exact numbers that year, but we know Devin Daniels has some talent. 2020 Andrew Wiggins from Maryland. That's last year's Andrew Wiggins. That's a solid, like, his numbers look really good. And it's just those last four games. And you have to wonder, maybe he just got it in his head that those last four games were going to be when NBA scouts were watching the most. And that's when you can kind of elevate your status a lot, like a Malachi Richardson and like we joke about. But it's true. I mean, that's where, you know, guys are going to skyrocket. Johnny Juzang is a lottery pick now all of a sudden because of his NCAA tournament.
Davion Mitchell,
right?
Top 10. I mean,
yeah.
You look at the pressure that some of these kids may face in the final stretch, and I think you're spot on there. Was it too much for him? Was he trying to impress NBA scouts too much? Because it largely came, a lot of his benchings, I know Jim likes to point to the defense, but a lot of it would come immediately after he would take a bad shot, and he knew it was a bad shot too that he had forced up there. But that's one of those things that with NBA training, some of those bad shots, and this is part of why I think he is one of the better pro prospects on this team and why he is an NBA caliber guy. I don't know if he's ever going to get there, but he's got the skill set to get there, is that he took NBA shots in college. A lot of them didn't go in. And I think that when he practices and when he's around the NBA game a little bit more, he can take some and make some of those shots as well. And that's why I'm a little more optimistic than I think the Twitter crowd is of him eventually getting to the NBA. Listen, I do not think he is going to get drafted. He will have to wow the hell out of people during the combines, and he's probably not even going to go to the NBA combine, but during like the G League combines and then individual workouts and all that extra stuff, he's going to have to put on a hell of a performance if he wants to somehow get drafted. I don't see it happening, but again, he's betting on himself here. And I think that, I mean, even going from Illinois to Syracuse was a bet on yourself type of move, because you got to remember, if Barama doesn't get hurt, there's no guarantee that Alan Griffin is starting this season, right? Because he didn't start in that first game. Everyone else slotted down a spot size-wise in the rotation, so he could have been a bench guy this entire year, coming off the bench, and maybe that would have suited him a little bit better, but I personally think that he's been the best pro prospect on this team for the majority of the season, and you put it best too, like the numbers are good behind him. There is a body of work there. It's just people have the sour taste in their mouth because of how the whole thing ended with the really lackluster performances and really not even seeing the floor for a good portion of the NCAA and some of the ACC tournament.
Yeah, my concern with him is he ready to kind of bring it when the lights are brightest? Because he did kind of slip in his performance once the NCAA tournament happened, and that had to be in his mind, and I hope that didn't weigh him down too much. And also, it's tough when Boeheim is on you and you know that you're probably going to get yanked and you don't have maybe the same amount of freedom as another coach would give you. The case for him as making it as an NBA player, I will say this, everything that we're talking about and all his flaws, I mean, he's kind of already there as an NBA role player, and that's really all you're looking for if you're looking for a second round or a G League ad. Like, can he spot up, shoot? Can he make some things happen off the ball? Absolutely. He's a good cutter. He's a good rebounder. He's a good shot blocker. Seems like he has the proper help defensive instincts and can play some good off the ball D. I mean, he got his hands on a lot of passes this year. And again, the zone was not really meant for him because he only had a year to learn it and not even an offseason really to learn it. And that set him back. And maybe some would argue he played out of position by playing in that forward spot at just 6'5", but he's a long rangy guy that does a lot of role player things very well. The question marks with him are, can he dribble? Can he score off the dribble? And you don't really need to do a whole, like, there are guys that make it in the NBA and they're just spot up shooters that do a lot of winning things on the defensive end. And I could see him getting to that point. I'm not saying he's going to make it. I think it's going to be a severely uphill climb, but that's the case, is you got to look at this from an NBA lens. Was he great for Syracuse? Maybe not because of the 2-3 zone, but he has some NBA qualities already that are kind of advanced.
Yeah, if you're a catch-and-shoot guy, there's a spot for you in the league. And especially if you can rebound the basketball on top of that and maybe get some steals here or there as well. Now, I know the man-to-man defense was a little bit of a question mark with him at Illinois too, but I think he's got the athleticism to at least figure it out, at least be serviceable enough. I think he's an NBA player. I've kind of maintained that stance, and I think I've been a little bit higher on him than most Syracuse fans throughout this season. But listen, I think he can do it. I think of all the guys on this team, he could have the longest NBA career. He will have a long professional career. I'll put it that way. Whether it's here, whether it's in Europe, whether it's the G, all that's like, he is going to have a long professional career in my eyes. That's just the way I saw it play out at Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to bet, I don't think he sticks in the NBA, but you're right. As a professional, he's got tons of potential. He'll probably start his career now and have a decently long career and make a good amount of money and enjoy playing the game that he grew up loving. And, you know, his dad has got some NBA ties, so I don't know if that helps or hurts him necessarily. I mean, I saw some people throwing out like, well, that'll probably get him a two-way contract or a 10-day type deal. I don't know if that's enough to get him there. I mean, you got to be talented. It's a business, and they're not just going to give it out to anyone. But as we're laying out, he's got a lot of talent. And I mean, even when you look back at his Illinois numbers, like an NBA scout has to look at that and think, okay, you know, what's his role going to be if we're signing a guy to a 10-day contract? Like, you just want some guy to come in, hit some shots in the corner, make some winning plays for you. That's kind of what he did at Illinois. He was very efficient, and scored a lot in short minutes, and he kind of has that built-in experience that could help him when he transitions to the professional game here. All right, a quick break here, guys, to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action right now. I was relying on betonline.ag over the weekend for some fun Masters bets. They had everything covered. I know football's over now, but you still got NBA, you got NHL in full swing, and BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They do some fun stuff, and you can even tweet at their account and ask for them to throw in a little prop bet, and they'll usually do it. They're really active on social media as well. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. And when you go to their website and sign up for your free account, don't forget about our promo code. It's Locked On, all one word. It gets you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's some real savings with our promo code. Again, that is Locked On, all one word, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's get into some of the Twitter responses from all you guys here. So we put some stuff out on our Twitter account at @LO_Syracuse. We want your reaction to the news that Alan Griffin is going to the NBA draft and is signing an agent, so he will not be eligible to return. We'll start with Derek L. He said, "I never felt like he was a good fit at forward here. Better suited at the two, but that was never going to happen." And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've kind of hit on that here. He kind of played out of position all season long, and it would have maybe been better for him at the top of the zone. But at this end of the day, like, defense, and Jim Boeheim has said this time and time again, defense is not ultimately what gets you drafted. It is your offense. And I think that Allen put together a nice little offensive resume, not just here, but at Illinois as well.
Yeah, and he has the defensive tools to be a good player. He's quick, he's rangy, so if you're looking at him defensively too, I do think defense matters more than Boeheim's willing to admit. That's a nice thing to say when you're trying to sell your program. But it's changing a little bit. Like, you've got to be switchable. You've got to be somewhat defensive oriented. And a lot of these players that don't get drafted in the top 10 are because maybe they just don't translate defensively to the modern NBA game. But in the case of Griffin, tools wise and skill set wise, he's got the defensive makeup that you need.
Yeah, it's all about the tools with NBA guys. And that's one of the things, is you get into the G League system, you get into some professional basketball system, they're going to build you up. They're going to find a way to make it work if you've got the tools. I mean, there are plenty of players. How many guys do we see get drafted off of potential? I mean, that's a big thing. And I think there is potential in a guy like Alan Griffin. A couple other people are saying, we've got @turf_on_fire. He won us the Buffalo game, Walmart Elijah Hughes, to which @gsnell78 says that was the block of the season. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to remember that Buffalo game, which is so weird, because a game against Buffalo and not a Nate Oates-led Buffalo team is not one that you think people are going to remember, but it really might have been the game that saved this season. And a lot of people really were loving the block. I saw a couple of responses about that, but that's the one that the legacy, in terms of, like, when you look back on his highlights at Syracuse, that right there, I think, has to be at the top.
Yeah, it's one of the best plays of the season, period. I would say there are a couple buddy shots that probably will finish as the memorable moments, some of the NCAA tournament shots that he hit. But if you're picking one play, and Boeheim said this right after the game, and call it hyperbole, recency bias, but he said that's one of the best plays he's seen in the Dome, I believe. It was something to that effect. And, you know, once we watched it, that was a shocking play. It was LeBron-esque, the chase down ability. Yeah. So you're right. If that doesn't happen, we're not talking about this team as a fun team in 2021.
@1TZTommy says, "Hopefully this means Benny will be starting now, but I'm happy for Allen and shocked at the same time." I mean, this kind of lines up pretty well in the succession plan. You've got a guy like Benny Williams coming in, and hopefully that's going to be the guy that you see replaced. Whether it's him, whether it's Quincy Guerrier coming back, which is still up in the air, but there is a good succession plan here. And Syracuse, when you look at the wings, they've always kind of had a nice little succession plan in place year to year, when they are filling voids. I mean, you think about, okay, Malachi Richardson leaves. Who steps in next? Andrew White, even though it was a little lackluster defensively. But then after Andrew White left, he was a prolific scorer. And then who comes in? It's O'Shea Brissett. And then who comes in after that? It's Elijah Hughes. I mean, there has been a rock-solid succession plan at the three for this team for a number of years now. And that, to me, I mean, Benny Williams, a lot of people are going to think that this is going to be an upgrade. And I would lean in that camp that Benny Williams will be an upgrade over Alan Griffin. But the succession plan, I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah, the only concern for me is if Quincy does not return, you're talking about three brand new forwards to the 2-3 zone.
That's
I think
fair.
Benny fits the 2-3 zone well. I think he fits it better than Alan Griffin did in theory, but he's still got to learn it. And Cole Swider, I don't know how great he fits it outside of being 6'9 and having some length. He's not super quick, and that was the knock on him at Villanova. Jimmy Boeheim, I think, is a good player if he comes, and we haven't, as of us recording, heard of that officially yet. I hope we hear soon because it feels like it's inevitable. But I do think he's, if anything, underrated just based on the coach's sudden label. He'll be a nice piece if he comes. But the defense will be a concern again. And it will probably be another one of those teams that struggles in the non-conference because they're learning the 2-3 zone with a lot of new pieces.
By the way, you bring up Cole Swider there. Should we tell the people? Should we tell them?
Yeah, why not? I think we got the verbal commitment, so I feel good
commitment.
About it.
Thursday, Friday, you will have Cole Swider on the show with us here on the Locked On Syracuse podcast. So look out for that. And if you're not subscribed, you got to do it now. So Cole Swider, we have a verbal commitment from him to come on the show. So look out for that. Last one, and then we'll get on out of here. From Marex Toothburner, one of my favorite accounts on this Twitter.com website, just hitting me that next year may be the most exciting college basketball season ever, mainly because literally none of the teams know how good they're going to be with this massive amount of roster changes. Is that what the Blue Bloods always feel like? Listen, I'm looking top to bottom. I mean, we saw the news yesterday. Walker Kessler, he's going to Auburn. Jaden Gardner from East Carolina is going to Virginia. I mean, there are big names on the move. Left and right, I mean, even from a Syracuse lens, you're shipping out a guy like Kadari Richmond, you're bringing in a couple of guys who are former top 100 prospects in Samir Torrence and Cole Swider. I mean, this is going to be a very interesting season. Like, whatever you're seeing in terms of way too early top 25s or the preseason top 25s, I would love to see how it stacks up at the year's end, because usually it's a dumpster fire. But, I mean, I saw a prediction the other day that every single tournament team next year is going to have at least two losses. Would not shock me. Not shock me.
It's also cool that we're getting some in-conference transfers now. You got Casey Morsell going to NC State from Virginia. Justin McCoy from Virginia, who is another North Carolina guy, is going to UNC. And it could build some rivalries. I think it's kind of fun. Like, a part of me was not hoping that Kadari went to Florida State, but then it'd be kind of cool if Kadari played Joe and there'd just be some hype around that game. So some of that stuff is probably going to happen more and more as we get more and more into this transfer portal era.
Listen, you can say whether or not you actually watch the NBA games or not, the drama of it all is fascinating. I love it. You love it, Tim. I'm sure a number of our listeners love it as well. This is what this is going to become now. This is what it is. And I love the fact that we are going to see this level of drama year in and year out. I find it super, super fascinating. And I know some people aren't loving it. I know a lot of coaches hate this, but this is part of adapting. And this is a new age of college sports. And if you want to keep the boat churning, like this is one of the necessary things that needs to happen. So, all right, that's going to do it for us here on the show. We will be back with you guys tomorrow. We're going to get into some more stuff, maybe some Buddy Boeheim stuff, maybe a couple football notes here or there as well. But don't forget, Thursday and Friday, we will have Cole Swider on the show to talk all things about his transition over to Syracuse, as well as some of the things from his time at Villanova as well. So be sure to hit that subscribe button. You'll get all of these episodes in your podcast feed first thing in the morning, and Tim and I will talk to you guys tomorrow.